Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. Welcome back. Today, I'm speaking to Janie of Silence and Noise, who is a sound therapist based out of Cornwall in the UK. Now, Janie has quite a profound story when it comes to sound therapy, where in her 30s, she was diagnosed with a brain tumour. And since working with sound for herself to aid the recovery of that tumour, she has come to understand the benefits, the healing properties, the science, and the magic that sound therapy-based work could bring, not only for herself, but for others too. Since completing my own sound therapist-based training, I'm always interested to explore how different sound practitioners work and how they bring their own sonic signatures out into the world. And even though Janie is very out there when it comes to her sound baths, she's actually really grounded in her approach to bringing science and spirituality together and understanding more about how things like the influence of the moon and astrology, for example, have a scientific connection, which we also dive into during the episode today. I feel very lucky during this podcast to have met some lovely people like Janie, who are also very open about their mental health, like I try to be. And when we chatted today, we were both not really in the best headspace and were feeling a little bit low during recording. And throughout the season, I just really wanted to find more realness about just showing up, even when things aren't shiny and in a perfect condition. And I'm also learning that there's never really a perfect condition anyway. But what I found from actually having this chat with Janie was not being in the best space mentally when recording or before recording. What I actually came out after was feeling much lighter and inspired and lit up again from our conversation today. So for those of you today who might be feeling like you're not also in the best place, you're not feeling your best self, I hope that today's chat just brings even just a little bit of lightness to your day. But before we start the chat with Janie, I'd love to share more about today's episode sponsor. Because it truly is on those not so great days that by having a moment for yourself, by just as simple as a ritual of pouring a tea during a moment in your day when things might seem overwhelming, it can bring you back to the breath, back into the body, and into the moment. And rose tulips times your yoga tea is a beautiful floral aroma of damask rose, infused with delicate notes of lemongrass, chamomile, ginger, and relaxing lavender, containing sustainable herbs and flowers that have natural healing properties for boosting the immune system, soothing the stomach, and aiding with relaxation. And for listeners, you get 20% off your purchase and a free sample with every order, so you can experience the different herbal flower combinations. And you can find the link in the show notes and simply enter the code MAGICTEA for 20% off your order and a free sample. We've linked the website and code in the show notes so that you can try it out for yourself. So thank you, Rose Tulips, for sponsoring this episode. It's a wonderful conversation with Janie of Silence and Noise on the correlation of science and astrology through sound therapy. I can't wait for you to hear it. So let's do it. Let's start the show. Hey Janie, how are you doing?
Hi Amy, I am okay, thank you.
Cool, thanks for joining me today. So for this episode, we are going to record something a little bit different to what I originally had planned. I'd originally planned the conversation for us to talk about something quite high vibe in the sound healing space. Today I'm not feeling very high vibe at all. Actually, I'm feeling very low vibe. And I'm trying more and more to just show up as I am on the podcast and not to always feel like I need to be my best self. And so we just had a quick conversation before we recorded, and I think this episode will be shared exactly as it needs to be today. And also, if anyone else is just feeling a similar way, then I hope it brings you some comfort. So I'm joined by sound therapist Janie, also known as Silence and Noise, who is going to share some insight on the correlation of science and astrology through sound therapy. And yeah, me and Janie have talked a little bit before. We had a pre-recording and just chat, and I feel like we just hit it off and could just chat and chat and chat and chat. So I'm very excited to talk to you today. And yeah, I feel like, well, let's just see what comes out today. I think it's going to be a great conversation. And just before we dive deep into the layers of sound, I just love to know a little bit more about you, Janie. And yeah, how are you? Where are you living now? What are you up to? Tell me your story.
How long do we have?
Yeah.
thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm a fan and a listener, as you know, and I've been really happy you've had so many of my friends and colleagues on. So I'm really excited to be here. So I live in Cornwall in the southwest of the UK. I was going to say English Riviera, but it's kind of just wild and beachy. It's really hot here today. It's like 30 degrees. So it feels more California, which is, I think, probably my spiritual home. I have a sound practice here. I am a practicing sound therapist. I'm whispering the word healer. I hate the word healer. I always struggle to find the right phrasing, and I'm forever rehashing my website, trying to find words that feel good to me. And that already speaks to what you started by saying, which is that kind of authenticity that is another buzzword that I love to hate along with
her.
But trying to find the words that say exactly what I do actually struggle with. But I hold sound spaces for people, all types of people with all kinds of conditions to come. And some people meditate, some people are seeking transcendence, getting out of their body, something that feels a bit psychedelic or high even. For some people, they're there for pain management or for escaping, particularly escaping conditions. I get a lot of people coming in with PTSD, anxiety, depression, a whole spectrum of conditions and situations. So I hold group events and I hold lots of one-to-one space. I don't do very well with walls. I tend to work in teepees and yurts and on the beach and in nature. And I'm really blessed to work in lots of amazing places here in Cornwall. I also read astrology, which I've been obsessed with since being a little girl. I dive in and out of the tarot. I'm kind of in an in phase right now. I practice with Reiki. I'm a retired, thank God, yoga teacher, and a few other bits and pieces. So all of that kind of weaves together in sound for me, but sound beautiful at the center.
Yeah, culminating into so many different dimensions. And I am really sad that I've never been able to go yet to one of your in-person sound events. But yeah, I've also been following you, I think, for a few years now, at least a few years. And everything I see that you're putting out, you know, online, and I know, oh, we could have a whole conversation on that, but how, you know, we cannot always get a perspective on people just online, but you are really a leader in the sound space, in my view. And what you're putting out is so multifaceted and also embedded within science and astrology. And I think it will be really interesting to talk about those elements within sound today, because as also myself as a sort of new practitioner in sounds, there's a lot of benefits behind sounds. There's a lot of myths behind what sound healing could do. So I feel like we can just talk about all those facets. And what I also discovered about you, Janie, I think actually someone had told me about this before we'd even had the conversation. And I was like, damn, that is an interesting story. Is the way that you actually came across sound therapy / healing in the first place. And it was around the brain tumor, right, is what you had. So would you mind sharing a little bit more about that story? Because I mean, we only talked briefly about it in our last chat, but I know that listeners would probably find this very fascinating.
Yeah, of course. So in fact, I had been involved with sound before I got diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Okay.
But in a really different way, it did really change it for me. So originally I came to sound probably in my late 20s. That would have been like the mid-noughties, like around 2006-ish. I worked in fashion. I was really burnt out. It was a really toxic environment. I mean, in my head, I loved it. It looked like I loved it from my Facebook and MySpace page. but I don't think I did. And actually, in hindsight, I know I didn't. I was super, super exhausted. I couldn't sleep. I had terrible anxiety. And someone, and I can't even remember who, I often try to remember who it was, and I just can't remember. Someone said to me, you should try a gong bath. It will just knock you out and you will actually get the rest you need. And I went along to one and it did just that. And it really did change my life in that sort of hour or so. It really had a profound impact on me for the rest of my life. And I started going to a lot of gong baths really as an alternative to going out, although I still did a lot of that as well. It was my escape, which I mentioned before, I think, the idea of just getting out of my body and just not having to be present in this physical form, and particularly mental space, that I found so stressful and so overwhelming, and that my voice just in my head never stopped. So initially that was what kept me, you know, that was how I found sound, and that was what kept me going. And I, you know, but in my very Capricorn rising kind of way, quite quickly got quite addicted to it and went to every sound healer I could find, which wasn't that many, strangely enough, in London at that time. And it was really part of my life, my practice. And it was, you know, beginning to show up in the yoga studios I was at and I taught at and I practiced at. So it was kind of part of my life in a kind of organic way. I really valued it. But then I got diagnosed with this brain tumor. And God, I actually can't remember. I think I was 33. It's crazy how things just soften your focus, isn't it, over time?
Yeah,
I was in my early 30s. I think I was 33, and it's turned out in the end not to be malignant, we don't think, although we've never been able to be fully sure. But it's just because something isn't malignant immediately doesn't mean it's not a big problem, and that's something I think I also had to kind of work through quite early on. So this brain tumor is called an acoustic neuroma. They're becoming more common, presumably because we have more scanning now available, more technology. But what it actually is a tumor that grows off the back of my ear, hence acoustic, and it pushes into the brain. So it's getting bigger and bigger, and obviously, you know, something the size of a golf ball in your brain is generally unhelpful.
Wow, yeah.
Whatever else it's doing, it's not doing anything that's helping you out. And what was really interesting for me was it was wrapped around the cranial nerves, the seventh and eighth cranial nerves, or the nerves were wrapped around the tumor rather, and that meant that the kind of the motor skills and the neurological skills that those nerves direct were being profoundly affected. And what those nerves direct is your balance, your hearing, and also your facial muscles. So I began to notice initially I just became really rubbish at headstands and yoga, and that was a real problem for me in that part of my life. But I just began to notice myself falling over a lot, my hearing was changing, and my understanding of sound was really changing. And I started to notice going into gong baths, actually, I began to feel very differently about them, and the sound was landing for me very differently. It was quite a long journey getting diagnosed and moving towards treatment. And when I finally did get the diagnosis, they were really keen to quickly move to quite an advanced surgery, which I really wasn't. I just didn't feel like it was going to be for me. So what I did instead was embrace quite a few other alternatives. I'm doing the thing that my mum would roll her eyes at, practicing. So I got involved with a lot of acupuncture, Ayurveda, I moved to a really alkaline diet, I did yoga therapy, a multitude of other things. But the thing that really was interesting for me was the sound, because it was already in my life, and I just felt, being an acoustic neuroma, there was some kind of message in there. You know, I always felt, and I still feel, that this tumor landed for me because I just wasn't getting the message that I was on the wrong path. I needed a big left turn sending in. And it really sent me towards what I now do in a really new way. The way I worked with sound was with tuning forks. So did a really fun session in Ibiza. Again, it's like an eye roll can accompany that. But I was in Ibiza and I had someone tune the tumor, and we began to work together to understand at what frequency the tumor was vibrating, so that we could then start to understand if there was any movement available in it, or if we could make it more comfortable, or if we could attune it in a way to the tissues around it. So there was a whole bunch of what I usually call hashtag cool science around that. And it was a different part of sound for me. It wasn't just lying in a drafty garage in Hackney getting loosely out of my head. It was actually something therapeutic to the body, and that really changed everything.
That's cool. I mean, and how long did that sort of journey last for you, in because you've mentioned you don't have the tumor at the moment, and hopefully never again. And how long did that sort of process take, and did you sort of have any other discoveries around sound and the benefits that it had for you at the time?
So yeah, actually I do have the tumor still, and it's
really
and it's very much still with me. I've never quite managed to name him. I usually call him my little snail because when I look at him on my MRI scans, he looks actually just like the golden ratio, which is also really of interest to me, the way the cells have grown in exactly the shape that you see with the golden ratio. I've only actually really just thought that in that moment. Isn't that mental?
What is the golden ratio, actually? I don't know what that is.
So in sacred geometry, which I know
Okay.
it's kind of the most beautiful kind of resonant expression of nature. So when you look
Okay.
into the kind of the DNA and the kind of helical structure, and when you see a lot of natural substances under the microscope, and I'm thinking things like tree leaves and kind of mushrooms and a lot of the kind of textures and aspects of nature that we refer to plant medicine and spiritual work. There's the fingers again. We see this kind of resonance that's reflected by kind of the maths and visual art of nature and sacred geometry. So the golden ratio looks like a snail, basically. I'm
Okay.
going to send you a picture of it afterwards and we'll talk about
Yeah,
it.
send me a
And
picture.
it represents the kind of visual representation. I never know whether it's phi or phi, PHI, the kind of the mathematical ratio, which is
Oh,
basically
yeah.
equals perfect harmony.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
That
that's
looks
why I have my head. A snail. He's still there. When I first was diagnosed, he was quite large, like kind of bigger than a golf ball. And the work I did, and I think it's a real combination of East and West for me, a combination of all the work I talked about, the Ayurveda, the acupuncture, the alkaline diet, all the rest of it, the sound, obviously, combined within the end, what I had was gamma knife radiosurgery, which, if I'm honest, I didn't really want, but it was really because my mum was like really concerned that I had it, and I felt like I really needed to do it for that side of my life at the time. But I think the two things work together. I don't think one would have worked without the other. And that really, that kind of science and art and spirituality and science intersection is really where I work from now. I do still have the tumor. And actually, it's really interesting because I feel him. He's definitely a he on the left side of the brain. I kind of feel him all the time, and especially in sound, because sound is looking for blockages, it's looking for kind of gatherings of cells or energy, which are creating a blockage or creating dissonance or disharmony in the body. So the first place the sound will go to in a sound bath is to the blockages. So almost the first place I feel sound, the second I step into the sound space
Is there?
is there, isn't that part
Wow.
of my head? So it's like this constant reminder, constantly keeping me on track and keeping me in my purpose, which I find I really need, because I'm really liable to go off track, clearly. So it's really helpful in that sense. And I still work with it a lot now. I find that my approach to sound, my approach to vibration is really different because my hearing is so has been so diminished by the experience. I'm down to about somewhere between 20 and 25% hearing in that ear now.
Oh,
So
right, okay.
it really changes how I experience sound. It changes how I experience vibration. And I still use tuning forks most days. I treat it like my cleanse, tone, moisturize, which I
It's
don't actually
just a
spend.
daily practice for
Yeah,
you.
it just really sets me up for the day, and I suppose it helps me feel like I'm in the most receptive state. I mean, the way we cleanse, tone, and moisturize to make sure that our skin is receptive, that it can breathe, that it can receive water, that it can receive moisture, it receives the nutrients it needs to get through the day. I feel like tuning forks kind of just set up my energy system for the day so that I can actually go out into the world and not be a complete mess all the time.
And Jay, maybe it's nice because I'm also just becoming quite aware that we are both in the sound space and we know what tuning forks are. But for those maybe that don't know what tuning forks are and what they're, I mean, you explained slightly with how they were used in Ibiza, but could you maybe share in your own thoughts, like, what is a tuning fork and also how is that related to science? And do you have any myth busters around those?
So tuning forks are, they're right out there on the sciencey end of sound therapy, and actually they're used medically. So particularly if you're my age and you're in your kind of, I was going to say late 30s, but let's face it, early 40s, if you're a child of the 80s and you ever broke a bone as a kid, you may have encountered tuning forks at the doctor's surgery, where they will basically strike a tuning fork on your body, and then they listen for the sound, and if the sound comes back with a break in it, they know there's a break in the bone. So tuning forks can be really diagnostic, and they can also be really healing. They are not quite the sort of fork you would eat with, but they're metal. They're either aluminium or stainless steel, and there's lots of thoughts about which is better in terms of weighting and how they play, how they sound, how they resonate. And they usually have a single stem and then two long forks. So it's like the weirdest, longest fork you've ever seen. Some of them have weights on the end, and those ones you would use physically on the body. And the ones without weights you would use in the aura and in the space, the biofield, the space around the body. And the thinking is that by using these tuning forks, we strike the fork to make it vibrate. And you can strike it on your hand, or some people use like an ice hockey puck, like something rubber and hard. I usually use the heel of my hand, and then you set the fork vibrating. And then whenever you place it on your body or in your biofield, you're sending that resonance, that frequency, that sound into the body and into the space around the body. So I use tuning forks in all of my sound baths, even in group sessions, usually at the end, on the third eye. And it's so interesting how people are always, always, of all the things, you know, I show up and give them 2 hours of this, I hope, amazing sonic odyssey. And they're like, yeah, but what was that thing at the end? I'm often like, oh God, the tuning forks.
Do you put that on the body? Do you put that on?
Yes, they usually... So usually once everyone's in shunyata, which is kind of the sonic equivalent of shavasana, when they're in the silence after the sound, silence and noise, see what I did with that. There we go.
Now I get it.
So when everyone's in the silence, usually I will then start to reintroduce some music. And actually, sometimes it might be harmonium or shruti box, you know, some mantra. Sometimes, you know, at the moment I'm in a phase of putting an acoustic Metallica song on. It's whatever feels good. And then I'll move around the room and just kind of check in with everyone energetically and, you know, work with my Reiki channel just to see how everyone's doing. Is anyone still really far kind of under and who might need to surface a bit more? They might need me to help clear them in order to come back comfortably. And usually what I do is I go around with a tuning fork and I'll just work with a couple of moments of Indian head massage and then apply the tuning fork to their third eye.
Amazing.
And it's so interesting that people don't even flinch. You know, you'd think someone coming over and just sticking their hands on your head and then a bit of metal between your eyebrows, you would immediately respond like, what the hell are you doing? No one ever does, because the frequencies I've selected are, I hope, in resonance with where they are. And what's really interesting is, you know, tuning forks are available in you know, in every frequency. You know, the human the human ear can run from 20 to 20,000 hertz in terms of what it can actually audibly hear. A lot of the tuning forks I use are right on the lower end of that. The one I use usually on the third eye is a Cosmic Ohm, which is 68 hertz. So actually the human ear can only just hear it. And I really like to say to people, this is a great example that we're not here to hear the sound, we're here to feel the sound, and to really encourage them to get away from the idea of using their tangible senses in the sound space. They're actually here for the intangible senses, their intuitive etheric senses, the ones that exist beyond this 3D physical body. So it's really interesting that when I come to the end with that tuning fork, people never ever hear it, but they feel it. And that's the part that I'm really excited about. And I, you know, for me, I just find that amazing every day. And I find it amazing that certain frequencies, however almost inaudible, can really affect our energy and our being and our physicality. And I have a tuning fork for everything. I have one for the nervous system. I have one that I use when I've got tight shoulder muscles. I have one that my cat likes, that when he's meowing a lot, I have one that keeps him quiet. So I have one right now. And they are kind of like, you know, I call them sonic prescriptions. You know, we're all frequency, we all vibrate it. We all have our own kind of innate frequency, and then all of our organs have their innate frequency. And as a species, as a mammal on this planet, you can say that most people's hearts are within a certain range, but they're all going to be completely unique. And the collection of frequencies that make us up is our unique blueprint. In the same way that we all have a unique astrological blueprint, for example. So it's really interesting how different frequencies land differently for different people. And you probably find that also with your bowls, certain bowls. Yeah. You know, me with my gongs as well, certain gongs just are so resonant, they just feel like coming home, and they just ripple through you and you have this sort of juicy kind of euphoric vibe. And then some are like nails on a blackboard and you're like, oh my God, hell no, get out of my ears and out of my body. And it's really interesting. So tuning forks, this is a long way around, I'm sorry, tuning forks are a really great way of understanding diagnostically what is our frequency, what works for us. And when I do one-to-ones, I usually start with them so I can then understand kind of where people are vibrating and resonating and what's going to feel good and where edges are and where they're not and how they're going to roll.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I mean, so much insight in what you just shared, that I'm buzzing, and I'm just, I love the wisdom that just came with that response. And yeah, I mean, I've, in my sound baths that I give, I've never used a tuning fork on a person, not in a,
a group setting, and that was just, yeah, wow, that sounds incredible. Damn, get me to Cornwall now. I need to come to one of your soundbars. Just sounds like such an incredible experience. And Janie, so then I think we should just dive straight into like the meat of the topic, which is around, yeah, basically kind of what you were already saying, as in you feel like there is this real need for more balance when it comes to approaching sound within, you know, bringing the world of science and spirituality together, and, you know, within the spiritual space. And in that essence, like, you, I know that you're very grounded and rooted in astrology as well, which is a whole vibe for you. How do you think they can play together more in combination? It's a big question, but I wondered if in a broader sense you feel like they can and should work together.
It's going to be a supersized episode. So much to say. I mean, the first thing to say is that I operate, practice, facilitate from, I always call it the intersection of science and spirituality. I did not grow up especially over spiritual. I actually grew up in a really Catholic household, which I really fought against really early. And my sense of what spirituality is was quite influenced by that childhood. Mm-hmm. And I kind of almost, you know, yoga became my religion, I think, in my 20s. And then I think that's where Sam has evolved from. But I also grew up with a lot of, you know, real fascination with science, and particularly the stars and astronomy and NASA. And my favorite ever holiday as a kid was getting to go to the Kennedy Space Station. I have more photos of that than I have of almost anything else apart from my cat, I think, in my whole life. And it's just always fascinated me, the idea of what goes on out there and what goes on down here. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I love living in Cornwall now, where I do, in the far southwest of the UK, is that we're surrounded by water here. And you appreciate tides in a really different way than I ever could as a kid growing up in the southeast of England, in the city, and in an urban environment, landlocked with no water, just a really dirty river. And it's really interesting how when we see the tides going in and out, you know, and their beautiful natural rhythm with perfect symmetry, completely predictable, you know, you can look at the tide tables 5 years ahead and it will definitely happen the way it's because of the moon. sound like extra hippie for 10 minutes, but, you know, I think it's so impossible to question the connection of what's going on up there and what's going on down here when you see that tangible reality. And I think especially as women, you know, with our cycle, and I really, again, cringe and hesitate with the phrase moon cycle. It's not a thing I use personally. I just call it periods because that's what they are.
Yeah, me too. No, I know, do as well.
There's a whole other vibe there that we can check into right now. But, you know, we know and we see the difference in ourselves when our own tide is really high and versus when our tide is lowering down. And we see how that affects us, you know, emotionally, physically, but psychologically, really specifically. I'm really, you know, aware of, you know, the rise in stuff like PMDD and the kind of really tangible outcomes of this kind of energetic change that ultimately is to do with our kind of own inner moon. I'm going off on a tangent, but the moon was where it all started, because I was just so fascinated, and then I always wanted a telescope. My partner gave me a telescope a few years ago, and it's just that shot here, and I've been doing my favorite thing. You know, I love to go out and look at the moon and all its phases and try and understand, but for me it seems impossible that we are experiencing life here on this 3D earth, and with all of our concrete and our cars and our digitization, that we're experiencing all of that, and that's just happening here on this little planet, and nothing that's going on outside has any impact on us. I just don't believe that, and I don't feel that my feeling is that that's not the case. And I feel, especially as I was saying, living here visually, you see that that's not the case. So I really like living here because it really helps me to connect every day to the idea that actually there's more going on than just what I can feel right now.
Yeah.
I guess the main correlation for me between sound and astrology, this is going to sound really highbrow and it's not intended to, goes all the way back to the 8th or 9th century, to the Emerald Tablet, which people may or may not know about, kind of the foundations of alchemy and natural philosophy. And this is like a Hermetic text. It's from the Hermetic tradition, which is kind of a combination of Greek and Egyptian mythology. So the Emerald Tablet is kind of the basis of all natural philosophy, alchemy, how we work with the elements, how that feeds into the periodic table, into chemistry, into the laws of physics, Newton, everything that basically creates our world. And one of the second line in the Emerald Tablet has been much translated in many different ways, originally in the Arabic, and it broadly ends up reading as above, so below. Mm. Whichever way round you cut it, that's kind of in the end where you land. And what I think is really interesting about this is this kind of lands from a place that certainly the ancient Greeks knew to be around sacred geometry. They could correlate what was going on astrologically into kind of images and into shapes and patterns. And we work with that in sound now in a process called somatics, which is really out there, and kind of, I just am so fascinated by the visuals of sound. But the basic thinking is that, you know, creation is in its perfect flow. You know, everything wants to be resonant, everything wants to naturally be in harmony. And when you break, you know, when you break something in two, when you break a cell in two, it will naturally replicate. And there's this kind of idea that the nature is in patterns. And we talked about it earlier. You see it when you look at patterns in butterfly wings, in the shape of a snail's shell, when you see patterns on shells or in crystals. Everything has this beautiful, natural, symmetrical pattern or geometry. And I guess the thinking is that that's us too. All of our cells do that. When you get down into our cells, they have that geometry as well. When you really get down into DNA and all the way down into the atom, that's what you see. And when they split the atom, they found it was 99% space. There was just the particle and the wave, electromagnetic fields and oscillation. And actually, when those two things interact, it creates a pattern. And when the pattern breaks, you get a fractal, and then it creates something new. And supposedly, if you really dig down into all this natural philosophy, in the end, the whole of life comes down to kind of the geometry of sound and this conversation between the particle and the wave. Uh-huh. I've just blown my own mind.
My mind is blown. You can tell by my face.
I can see by your face. But it's really fascinating. To me, it's so fascinating because then when I try and explain this to people, and I don't think I've done a great job, and I'm by no means an expert, but I'm just fascinated by this idea that natural science and chemistry and, you know, quantum physics are all kind of in the end come down to beautiful patterns in nature. Yeah. And that we're also expressions of those patterns, which is why when you project sound into matter, you know, you see it when you put a drop into a bowl of water, into a singing bowl, you get a ripple effect, you get a shape, and it's always a symmetrical shape. Mm-hmm. So fascinating. And I suppose when I think back to the pull focus and go all the way back on the zoom out in terms of astrology and sound, everything that's going out there in space and in matter, and, you know, with different levels of air and different chemical compounds, and everything that's happening in the universe around us is also all matter. It's also all, you know, geometry, geometrical at its core. And so are we.
Yeah.
Peaceful connection. We're all, everything is connected, and we are connected through sound, because everything actually is frequency, is sound waves at its core.
Right. We're all vibrating, aren't we?
Crazy as that. We're all vibrating. Vibration. And, you know, if you I know you've talked to people about crystals on the podcast before, and, you know, that's one of the places I really lose the skeptics. And I, you know, for years I was a real skeptic as well, until I got to a point where I could hold a crystal and I could feel it vibrating, even though my eyes were telling me it was sitting still. And actually, it's because its vibration is so subtle, like some of those tuning forks right down at the lower end. Our human senses are not refined enough to connect with them, and you can kind of see it like a camera or a telescope. You know, we're our human senses, our five senses are really just the kind of the big lens.
Right.
When we get down into the fine lens and the granular lens, which our higher senses, our intuitive senses give us, we can really appreciate those vibrations differently.
Yeah.
And that's what we do in the sound space.
Thank you so much, Jamie. And oh my God, I think you said at one point you are not an expert, but well, if you're not an expert, then I don't know who bloody is in the sound space, I have to say. So many things on that you mentioned. I feel like I'm going to listen back to those lovely juicy nuggets as well, and go deeper into my research. But I also wanted to just pull back on something you said about, I guess the last piece mainly of, and I guess this is also I find it a bit of a struggle in the sound space for getting people into, you know, a class space sometimes, because they do just think, I think you mentioned it in the beginning of the episode, like you literally just lie down and just, you know, it's just sound. And I guess my question is, do you feel like you need to have kind of a connection already with your own senses and a belief around it? Or yeah, what would you say to someone that's like never been to a sound bath before, who maybe is a bit of a skeptic?
They're my favorite people to welcome in. Actively try and attract them in all the time. And I've always tried, because that was me. I was totally that skeptic as well. I remember my first session, I really wasn't quite sure what happened. I was pretty sure they'd spiked the tea they gave us, some other thing. I wasn't really sure. And it did take me a long time and actually a long amount of studying. And when you say about being an expert, I'm really not, but I would say I'm fairly encyclopedic, because I really am so fascinated and I just love to learn about all of the different facets of sound and and sound science and astrological science and astronomical science as well. I think when someone comes in and they're really skeptical, all I can do is ask them just to lie down and trust me. And that can be really hard. Mm-hmm. But I do find that I have a lot of these people. I do a lot of one-to-one and a lot of couple work. And nearly always in the couple work, there's one person who is, you know, a sound aficionado. They've done it loads. They're really excited about it. They want to share it with the person they love or their best friend, who is not into it and really doesn't want to be there. And it's hard to get them off their phone and certainly to turn their phone off. And those are my favorite people, because usually the ones that come in without preconceptions and without these, you know, without ideas of what they might experience, are the ones that then are open to having the biggest experience, because they're not colouring their own vision. I do, and again, this really speaks to the astrological side, I really use astrology to help me understand where we are. You know, if someone is extremely earthed, you know, if, for example, they are, you know, heavily Virgoan and, or, you know, have a lot of Capricorn in their chart, I know that they are most likely going to be really most responsive to science and to theory and to tangibility. They're going to want to understand, particularly Virgoans are going to want to really understand what's going to happen and how it's going to happen and the detail of how it's going to happen, because otherwise they're going to worry and be anxious, and then that will keep them out of experience. So I use astrology as a tool to help me ascertain how to meet people where they are. Actually, there's a way for those people to come in for sound therapy and sound experiences and have the most incredible psychedelic kaleidoscopic journey, but I need to meet them where they are and explain to them that stuff about the atom and the stuff about the fractals and give them some quantum physics. And then for some people who are, you know, potentially quite airy, and they, you know, this is not a, you know, direct, you're a Gemini, therefore it's going to be easy, but people who are, you know, likely to overthink, then it's really about trying to choose instruments and choose sounds in a way that's going to quickly get their brainwave slowed down as fast as possible to get them out of that thought process, because they're going to stay there overthinking. The easiest people, obviously, are the water signs, as you and I know.
I was just going to say, what's a Scorpio transformation?
we're both the Scorpio sun. So, but, you know, I think, you know, watery energies tend to be, you know, a little bit more naturally attuned to their yin energy, much more open to their emotional responses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for those energies, I find, you know, I also, I'm, you know, tending to choose instruments. I always choose instruments really carefully in the order in which I work with them and, you know, the space in which I work with them. It's all part of the process. But I find that that kind of just that, even just a very top line, knowing someone's sun, moon, rising really helps me, along with feeling into them Reiki energy wise, to just get a steer on what they need to, for me to meet their skepticism. You know, someone that's already kind of quite watery energy, they're quite emotional, is going to, you know, I hope, and generally in my experience, really respond to the potential for an emotional journey and for working with unresolved trauma, or for being met by a spirit or a guide or an energy which is going to kind of really speak to that kind of left body, right brain part of them that's kind of really transformative and plutonic.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a lot of my energy. I find that a really easy one to lean into. Earth energies, I find really freaking hard to lean into. So I have to really think that little bit harder and like tune in that little bit more to work out how to meet that person. But what I've discovered over the years is that the science, if nothing else, they're fascinated. And if all else fails, I can just bore them to death and they'll fall asleep. One or the other. As you can tell, I can go for hours on this. So, you know, if they're really struggling, I just keep talking until they doze off.
Oh, thank you for answering that one. And I would love to ask you, and we also were talking quite openly before we click record, I think, about, you know, our own mental health and how it, you know, it's also as practitioners, how it can be quite tough sometimes to, you know, just actually show up in the space. Even just recording this today is not, you know, the normal flow, but I think it's really important to just, just meet yourself and meet people where they are. And you talked a lot of, just then, about meeting people in a one-to-one space. But how do you navigate that? Personally, I guess, like from a group sound journey point of view? And does that also, do you think, have an influence with what's happening astrologically at the time?
Absolutely. And I know we were excited to share what we talked about before in this, because we, I think, have both had that experience of turning up in a space and just nothing is right. You know, I had one the other week and it was so hot here, and the, you know, I'd been asked to start earlier than I wanted to, so the sun was too high, everyone was dripping with sweat, including me. It was just not an ideal environment in which to experience sound. And then there was distractions, there was outside noise, the floor kept creaking in a weird place that didn't really creak, everything just felt wrong. I wasn't in a great place myself that day, and was, you know, people were late, and I was just like, oh my god, this just, none of this is flowing. And it was also one of those events that I hadn't scheduled myself. When I had a look at the chart that day for what was going on astrologically, energetically, and, you know, I didn't even need to look at the chart to know that it was just a day of very square astrology, which is very conflict driven.
Okay.
It just didn't, it just felt aggressive and sharp edges. Everything was really jagged. And, you know, I tuned into that and felt, you know, I need to just find a way to meet that. You know, that's what's showing up. So it's likely that big parts of this sound bath, if I just kind of get into my flow and tune in, they're going to come up and it's going to bring a lot of conflict out for people. So I need to frame that with, you know, countering that with some real softness and gentleness. So I, you know, the first thing was quickly reconfigure my playlist, which I like to, you know, I use ambient sounds and I use just, you know, music, music I love. I, you know, people that come to my sessions know that I use a lot of acoustic and reimagined, let's call it grunge and emo.
Amazing.
Soundgarden features more often than people might expect in a sound bath. You know, and I kind of quickly think about how I set the space. I might then really consider what I'm doing with incenses or the crystals that I brought, or you know, how I'm going to even configure the space. You know, I often might choose to put people in a circle around me rather than have them kind of theatre style, and just quickly make those decisions to work with the energy that's prevailing and work with what I'm bringing in as well. You know, in a space where I'm in front of people, and I don't know if you experience this as a yoga teacher as well, there can be moments where suddenly you have an existential crisis. You know, like, what the hell am I doing sitting in front of these people? Why are they looking at me?
100%.
And if you're just stood there with your back to the wall and people staring at you, I can quickly flick into a place of real discomfort that then really, you know, it will influence in some way, hopefully for the best in the end, what I'm offering them. But I might think, if I know I'm having one of those days where I feel a bit wobbly and a bit, you know, this isn't really my vibe, what's going on energetically is not working for me, I feel like crying.
Yeah.
The oven on, have I fed the cat? And my brain starts spiraling. I just put myself in the middle of a circle because there's safety in that. And then there's also, it keeps me engaging with everybody. It keeps me moving and connecting with everyone in the room, which reminds me that I'm there in service as well as to receive myself, and stops me getting into that panic of being in front of people, which sometimes really happen in those moments. And, you know, I think having those tools, and I, you know, I do use, we said at the top, I use a lot of other tools. I don't kind of go into a room and just start banging a gong. There's a lot of other things in the space. And so sometimes people come in and maybe the sound is really secondary or tertiary for them. And actually they come and what they get from a tarot card or from the chat about the prevailing energy pulse might be what they really needed that day. And the sound might be just a nice distraction. They lie down and chill out for a bit. For some people, they come and the sound is this huge transformative thing. And if they picked a tarot card, they don't care and they can't remember it. And that's fine too. It's they're all portals. And I think, you know, we need them as facilitators as much as our people need them.
Oh, I love that. Actually, and what you just said about, I haven't tried that before, but I think that's a wonderful one. Because it does happen sometimes, I think, when you, if you are having a wobbly day. And I had a similar experience recently, actually, where I was facilitating a sound bath and it was just, it was awful. It was just really awful. Like, people showed up again, also late. There was a bee that was like buzzing around. And actually I was just like, you know, that's a sound, like, just allow that sound to be there.
Sounds are welcome, but are they?
But they're not. And people were very agitated by it. And anyways, it, and yeah, and it can feel quite, quite exhausting, I think, when things go wrong. And it does happen. But what you just mentioned about moving into a circle of that being a safe space. And I think also just like, moving through whatever you need to move through. And I think some people can certainly come to sound baths or, you know, sound experiences and expect it to be a wonderful, you know, high vibes experience. And it isn't. Do you have any examples, Jamie, of when people have come and sort of come to you after and sort of said, that was terrible?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to say all the time. I don't want to completely my years of hard work. But, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, it's not always about coming to have a good time.
Yeah.
We're here to, you know, and I also struggle a lot and I'm cringing to hear myself say we're here to do the work. But, you know, we're coming to these sessions for an experience. Mm-hmm. You know, no one said it was going to be an amazing experience or a really positive one. Sometimes it's really challenging. And that also for me really attunes to the prevailing energy and to what else is being offered around us, what we're bringing, what everyone else in the room is bringing, particularly in a group session. You know, you can come in a great place, and if you're sandwiched between two people having like a really Saturn square Uranus sort of a day, like you're that energy is going to come in for you too. So mm-hmm. it can really, you know, it can be not what people expect. And I really try and prepare people for that. But particularly if you're coming in with an intention to work with some unresolved trauma or something quite challenging in your, you know, physical, mental, emotional backstory, you know, if that arises, it's not going to be comfortable. You know, going to therapy isn't comfortable. And
yeah,
I had someone, I literally last week had someone who I know well and is a regular client come in, and at the end of a session, a group session, I went, you know, I always will go and, you know, have a chat to everyone, check in on people. And I went to check in on her, and she was just like, no, that was not the one, and I am not in a good place, and I'm leaving. And, you know, fortunately I knew her, and I, you know, if I hadn't done that, I'd have followed up with her in other ways. But, you know, I fortunately saw her again a few days later at another event where she had a completely different experience. And we talked about how that was partly what she'd brought from her day and the things that happened and how her energy was. It was partly, it was that session with the crazy and the loud people next door and the mad parking and the weird creak in the floor, and everything was chaotic. And, you know, my energy probably wasn't in its right place either, but I was, my maybe sort of transience or the challenges I was there with was making space for her to go, okay, well, there's challenge in the room, so it's okay to bring my challenge up now as well. But, you know, it can sometimes be really difficult. And I always make a point at the beginning of sessions, in group sessions, or I mean in all sessions, but particularly I do a lot of retreats in places where I don't have time with people before to get to know them or find out their story. So I always hold space to really check in, who's new, who's never had sound before. You know, has anyone, you know, if people have had sound and it's someone I know, it's quite interesting because I, you know, may have experienced those people's work as well. It gives me a sense of how it might compare. But I really try and remind people that actually, you know, you might just float away. You might feel like you're asleep. You might be having a beautiful dream or vision. You know, a dead cat might come and meow in your face for 2 hours. Like, you know, that could happen too. and you know, and also the physical things, you know, one of my earliest memories as a guest, as a recipient, was I remember coming out of this sound bath and I literally thought I died. I tried to breathe and I couldn't take a breath in.
And
I'm asthmatic and quite prone to panic attacks. And I really visit, like I'm experiencing it now thinking about it. I really tried to take a deep breath and it just wasn't there. I was like, oh my God, have I died? And I had this huge panic and I began to experience what I thought was sleep paralysis in some way, that I couldn't breathe and I couldn't move my body. And I got really panicked. And eventually I kind of did manage to take a breath, but then it came out in this huge cough and then I was spluttering and then it was hyperventilation. And it was just, it was a really big experience. And actually now I know that one of the things that can happen in sound is that if you get to a really deep trance state, you know, your breath will really slow down the same way as when
I see,
you know, monks doing the eternal Om in monasteries in Tibet. You know, my own breathe barely once every couple of minutes because they're at such a state of, again, I hesitate to say Zen, but their brain is such a lowered state. Their body is functioning in a very, very gentle, almost imperceptible way. And that happened to me in this session. But, you know, the me coming back with a thud into this yoga studio, God knows where, was not, didn't understand that. No one had told me.
No one told you, right.
I was just talking. And I did have a good chat to the facilitator afterwards, who was actually still a really good friend. And she really explained to me the science of why this might happen. And and then I felt safe and it was okay. And I really make a point of trying to just let people know that, you know, it doesn't happen all the time or for everyone. That's only happened to me 2 or 3 times ever. But you know, it can do. And just to know that maybe not everything, you know, none of this stuff is comfortable. Like it's not necessarily supposed to be.
Not always, exactly. And thanks for going there, because I think it's important, isn't it, to kind of do some myth busting around you know, sound therapy and sound healing, because I have also people coming up after mine and sometimes saying, oh yeah, it was really not nice and I experienced this and this. And I also tried to at the beginning as well, just sort of give some examples. But I would also like to maybe end on some of the wonderful things that sound can bring, because I feel like me and you are Scorpios and we go go straight into the dark, but actually there's light as well, and so many benefits that come with sound. And you know, I hope we haven't scared anyone off. I doubt it, because it's so multidimensional, isn't it? But yeah, Janie, in your words, some of the best benefits that sound therapy can bring. What have you seen in your life, apart from also just the brain tumor recovery? I mean, that's huge one.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many benefits, and I know that you've spoken with sound therapists and healers before. And we can all go and Google. You know, there's lots of obvious ones. You know, it can calm your heart rate down. It can help to improve your blood flow. There's a blood flow. There's all sorts of evidence about you know, blood that when it's been in a sound bath, in a gong bath for 20 or 30 minutes, the red blood cells completely reconfigure, and it really changes how your blood can then process oxygen. So there's lots of physiology, and I think it would be amazing if we could get some more scientific research into this. That's something I'm really interested in working on, particularly obviously from the neurological perspective. And I do try, you know, I do a lot of work, particularly with PTSD and anxiety conditions. So I'm really interested in actually the therapeutic applications of sound, because they are phenomenal and untapped. And it seems madness when we've had sound longer than we've had language, that we are still utilizing it in the ways that we possibly could in the modern medicine field. So I'm really, you know, there are medically and physically lots of amazing benefits. But for me, the benefits that are the most important is a huge one, which I hear all the time in this modern world, is the fact that we can get our minds to turn off, and that constant inner monologue, the chatter, the kind of the accusatory voice and the stressful voice is just able to be switched off. And you can actually find that stillness and peace and quiet that we all think we're going to meditation for, that we all go to yoga for, but actually, do we really manage to get there very often? Because we're still so conscious, our conscious mind is running the show. Mm-hmm. And in sound, actually, the conscious mind is put right back in its place, and you can really experience yourself and your body and your consciousness really purely and without all of that noise and labeling and, you know, external structures. And that for me is real magic. I think as well, just the fact that it's so quantum, everything just happens bigger, faster, and more amazingly in the sound space. You know, a 45 minute gong bath gives your body the rest at a cellular level of, you know, 4 to 5 hours sleep. So, you know, if like me, you've always struggled with sleep and insomnia, you can really give yourself a quick reboot in a way that is actually going to tangibly really improve your day and help you function more efficiently in your work and your relationships and how you show up for everything and everyone in your life. And you know, I don't know why we wouldn't want to have that if we could do it in a non-invasive way that, you know, has pretty much no carbon footprint you know, and is, you know, may feel like it has a cost, but actually at what cost? That peace of mind. And that's really powerful.
That's amazing. Those are some great facts that I also didn't know, so thank you for sharing those. And yeah, I would love it if you could do more research or stuff like that. If you ever get into that aspect of things with universities or anything, I think it would be amazing to have that kind of research out there. And I would definitely put my hand up to help you in any way or shape or form. I think that would be incredible to have just the more science I think we can bring around these things and more tangibility, I think would help to convert more people into just giving it a try and just showing up. And yeah, would be cool.
And I know I've probably labored lots of these points a lot, but I'm really always mindful. And I know we talked a bit about the word healing, which I find really triggering and divisive, and I really do try not to use professionally or personally, actually. I really see sound like many of these alternative or complementary practices as something where we as facilitators are just creating the space and providing the tools for the body to come into its own harmony. You know, we all have our own resonance frequency, and we're bringing the body back into that. And in that state, it can self-heal. It can, you know, it can heal itself a lot more effectively, efficiently, and quickly. But, you know, I have anecdotally had some amazing outcomes and results in group sessions, in one-to-ones, you know, just the messages I hear back from people weeks, months, even years after a session, that they've had a complete shift, particularly in terms of pain. And I think that's really interesting. I, you know, where we work with things like fibromyalgia and long-term back pain, sciatica, things that really affect us in our mind and really affect our ability to proceed with our day. We can really do a lot of reprogramming in the sound space, because actually when we separate our physical body and our higher consciousness, our supraconscious mind, the supraconscious mind realizes that actually the pain isn't really there. And I know that's not to do a disservice to people who are in long-term chronic pain, so there's many of us. But I have seen some really huge results, and that's, you know, I really, really want to try and offer people that, you know, it might just be the thing that works for you.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Why not try?
Exactly. Thank you so much for talking to me, Janie. I have loved it. I'm going to definitely listen back to this multiple times to like scroll down all your insights. Before we go, do you have any tips for people wanting to connect? Maybe with sound therapy / healing, whatever you want to call it. And also, how can people find you as well?
Absolutely. I mean, the great thing now is, I think with what's happened in the last couple of years, there's lots more people and practitioners working online. I did for a while. I don't really do much anymore, but I made it the odd thing, and there's still lots of archive. And you can definitely experience sound from a meditation perspective online. You don't even need to be in the room. Obviously, for the more therapeutic and the vibrational side, you do. And I'd really recommend getting into a space as soon as you can. But you can make a start just by going into YouTube and searching Gong Bath. Other platforms are available, obviously. There's also there's quite a few apps now. Various practitioners really pushing the boundaries of what they can do digitally. So I think starting online, I mean, even things like Insight Timer, all of the apps have sound options in there now. And it's a really great way just to connect and see if it resonates for you. Because, you know, like I said, a lot, there's many portals and ways in, and, you know, it may turn out to be just the right one. But certainly getting into a space with a practitioner, there's nothing like it, and nothing like that vibratory experience that you really need to be in person for. And there's more and more of us all over the place now. So many.
Yeah.
And if people wanted to find me, I'm still old school enough to use my website, which is silenceandnoise.co.uk. And you can find me on Instagram at silenceandnoise. And I do work online a little bit. I'll be doing a bit more later this year. Mostly I work in the UK at the moment, but I'm going to be moving back out again a little bit more over the end of this year. So you'll find me mostly in a teepee on a cliff or somewhere without walls.
I love it. Thank you so much, Janie. I really enjoyed the chat today, and it's cheered me up a lot. So thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.